the applicable zone ordinances. Senate Bill 311 establishes for the purposes of application for permanent limited land use decision a zoning change when an incomplete application is deemed completed. Mr. Green.
Chair McPherson, members of the committee, as Mr. Taylor mentioned, my name is Chris Crane. I'm an associate with the law firm of Beery, Elsner & Hammond in Portland. I serve on the executive committee for the real estate and land use section for the bar, where I chair the subcommittee on land use legislation. I've been practicing land use for about 12 years, including 6 years with legislative counsel. I also served with the law firm of Miller Nash and assistant county attorney in Multnomah County. All of that was doing land use. Every session, during the interim, the subcommittee on land use legislation gets together and combs the land use landscape and tries to come up with bills that we can all agree on that we would consider law improvement. We scour the obscure little corners of land use practice and try to find legislative fixes that no one can object to. And this year, we bring you Senate bills 310 and 311. Starting with Senate Bill 310, this is, as I say, an obscure little problem of land use law. It'll probably take me longer to describe than it deserves, but it happens frequently that counties, often through tax foreclosure and other means, come into ownership of little slivers of property, say, for example, a two-foot strip that's 100 feet long. They don't want it. They would love to get it back on the tax rolls, but there's a statute that says that county property has to be sold at auction, and the administrative costs in terms of time and expense of taking property through auction is substantial, especially for something that is virtually valueless. Fortunately, there is an escape hatch for those little bits of property, and that's ORS 275.225. If a property meets two criteria, they can take it directly to private sale without having to go through auction. The property has to be worth less than $5,000, and it has to be not considered a buildable lot or unbuildable under the county zoning ordinance. Unfortunately, well, the statute says under the building codes of the county, zoning building codes of the county, unfortunately, a lot of this property, of course, is in cities where there aren't any county zoning or building codes. And I can tell you from practice that county property managers and assessment managers and so on have been conveniently ignoring that part of the statute and going to the city and getting confirmation from the city that the property is, in fact, not buildable under the city zoning codes. And if it's not buildable under the city zoning codes and it's worth less than $5,000, they go ahead and dispose of it at private sale. What we think we ought to do is bring the statute back in line with practice, and the amendment just says that the property can't be buildable under the applicable zoning codes, be that city or county. So that's all that Senate Bill 310 does. I might point out to you there's another bill, I think it's Senate Bill 671, that increases the monetary limit to $15,000. We also think that's a good recommendation, but Senate Bill 310 only deals with the applicable zoning regulations. With that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Questions, Chair.
Representative Whitman.
Thank you, Mr. Kane. Is it Mr. Kane?
Crane.
Thank you, Mr. Crane. We have a city road that's not being built on, and the people want to buy the road. Do you think that it would be good to put in this bill too, that you get preference to neighbors? Or, I mean, what, you know, I'm assuming that's who you're going to sell it to, but who else would have interest on a non-billable lot? So did you discuss the possibility of preferencing as far as the sales?
Chair McPherson, Representative Wisnet, that's a whole different Pandora's box. That involves the road vacation statutes,
okay.
And there is a process for where if a city or county vacates a road, there is a process for determining where that property then goes. And in most instances, it does in fact go to the adjoining property owners, to the center line of the vacated road. That's
about
the most common about
cost.
I beg your pardon?
There's no cost. Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Without cost? There's no. They don't pay for it. They just get it, you're saying, in that situation?
Chair McPherson, Representative Wisnet, it depends on the nature of the city or county ownership. If all the city has is an easement for roadway purposes, then the underlying property still belongs to the adjoining property owners, and there is no cost. If, in fact, the city owns the dirt underneath the road, then they would probably sell it to adjoining property owners, but that's a policy decision that the city could make.
Thank you. Please don't bill me for that.
So, and Mr. Crane, just so I understand, on Senate Bill 310, the point of clarification is that it's both city and county building codes that were, it was unclear that it was both of those. Is that the
Representative McPherson, applicable zoning ordinances is the relevant language. The county, it currently says, under current zoning ordinances and building codes of the county. Well, of course, there aren't any county zoning ordinances in a city, and you determine whether a lot is buildable under the zoning ordinances. The building codes don't come into effect until after the construction has been approved. So what we needed to do was make sure that the statute references the applicable zoning ordinances, whether that be city or county.
Any further questions on Senate Bill 310? Then why don't we hear about Senate Bill 311?
Did you introduce that?
I did,
Mr. Chief.
Okay,
Mr. Crane.
I apologize. Thank you. On Senate Bill 311, by way of brief background, there was a bill, and I think it was 2003 or 2005. That allowed amended the city. These are the statutes that govern the process for approving land use decisions. There's a chapter for cities and a chapter for counties. And in 2003, I think it was 2005, we amended the city statutes to allow cities to determine a land use application to be expired after about 180 days. And the problem was that cities would get these land use applications and they wouldn't be complete, and they would tell the applicant, you need to get us this additional information, and then they would never hear back. And they've got this application sitting there and they don't know what they can do with it. And they were afraid if they just put it through the shredder that somebody would come back and they would later get hammered for that. They wanted authority to determine these old dusty land use applications that were piling up on the shelves. They wanted authority to go ahead and determine those expired and dispose of them. We did that for cities in, as I say, 2003 or 2005. Unfortunately, the bill title was relating to land use applications at a city, in a city, and so we couldn't put in the county zoning statutes. So we come back to you now this year with a bill that expressly that does exactly the same thing for counties, so that we have parallel processes at cities and counties. This is of particular relevance to non-home rule counties, who only have the authority given to them by the legislature. So I can tell you that there are some counties out there that have boxes and boxes of old land use applications. The applicant never got back to them with the additional information they needed to process the application. They're just sitting there collecting dust. And the counties would like the same authority cities have to determine those expired and go ahead and dispose of them. And there's language in here that, as I say, it reflects what's in the city statute, but it's caught some people's attention, so I'll explain it. When you submit a land use application to a city or county, they have 30 days to get back to you and say, look, we're going to need a transportation study, or we need a grading plan, or we need you need us to show the base height of the buildings, or we need additional information to determine whether or not we can approve this application. They have to do that within 30 days. Then the applicant has 180 days to get back to them. They can either give them the information, give them some of the information and say that's all you're going to get, or say, forget it, I'm not giving you anything else, go ahead and process it as is. If you don't do any one of those three things, you just fail to get back to the city. After 180 days, the city can say, that's it, set that one aside, we're moving on and we're doing other things. So that's the language that you see on page one of the printed bill at lines about 17 through 25. So that's just the administrative process for land use applications at cities and counties. And what Senate Bill 311 does is give counties the same authority that cities have to determine that old land use applications are expired and they can go ahead and shred them and move on. And again, I say this is particularly important to non-home rule counties who need this authority from the legislature to do that. And with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Representative Krieger.
In the event that the person makes the application and then the county sends a notice for more information, how do you know if they ever got it? I mean, where I live in rural Oregon, I probably have 2 to 3 pieces of mail we're finding a month that's lost.
Mm-hmm.
We've verified that. We've gone to the postal service and other people are having the same problem. Someone may have changed their address.
Mm-hmm.
And never get the notice, and they're sitting there waiting. Is there any second notice, any phone call, any backup to see if they've received that notice for more information?
Chairman Pearson, Representative Krieger, that there's nothing in statute. In practice, there are two things typically that operate. Most counties I'm familiar with will make multiple attempts to get through to the applicant to make sure that they know what information they need to submit to complete the application. The other thing is the applicant, if they're concerned about this and they haven't heard anything, they'll go back to the county and say, are you guys working on my land use application? I didn't hear from you, so I assumed it was complete. And somebody will close the loop at some point, unless the applicant has just walked away. But as I say, most counties have their own procedures for making multiple attempts to get back to the county, to get back to the applicant, and make sure that they're aware of what the city or county's concerns are. But there is nothing in statute.
Chair, do you think it would be better if there was a prescribed manner in which that was done, so it was consistent? All counties, and at the end of 30 or 60 days, the second letter, then that's it, something? Because we could say that they have a policy of doing it. Well, a policy isn't something that has an enforcement behind it.
Chairman Pearson, Representative Krieger, in theory, maybe, but given that each one of the 36 counties has its own process for that right now, establishing a single process that works for all 36, I would be loath to do that on the fly like this, certainly, but it might be something that like AOC could take up during the interim. One of the reasons that suggestion appeals to me is that it would give the counties finality. If we follow this process after a certain number of days and we don't hear back from the applicant, we've done what we're statutorily required to do. We're off the hook. Whereas now, so at any rate, that might be a good suggestion for counties, but I suspect that there are enough different ways that counties are doing it now, and they would be they would want to certainly have a voice in any statute that directed them to follow a particular process.
Go ahead.
I just want to make sure that the applicant has received it. That's my concern. Mm-hmm. Now, the fact that some check, some don't check, and they do it by different ways. Mm-hmm. And as you say, maybe Social Oregon County should look at some process that fits them in the future.
Mm-hmm. Representative McPherson, or Chair McPherson, Representative Krieger. Yes, at some point, there's a shared burden here. I think the county has to make, cities and counties have to make every reasonable attempt to communicate with an applicant. The applicant also shares some burden to follow up. If they have made the effort to put together a substantial land use application, they paid the application fee. If they don't hear back, I suspect that most good faith applicants will go back and check with the county. It's not a problem that I've heard coming up, quite frankly. I've not heard that be a problem.
Okay. Any other questions, Mr. Crane?
Yep. If I apply, I call back.
If not, then I will close the public hearings on Senate Bill 310 and Senate Bill 311, and open work sessions on Senate Bill 310 and Senate Bill 311. Members, 310 they both look pretty straightforward, but I say it's particularly 310. Do I hear a motion on Senate
Chair, Bill? Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 310 to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Krieger moves Senate Bill 310 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? If not, the clerk call the roll.
Representative Bonamici.
Aye.
Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Representative Wise.
Excused.
Representative Koff.
Aye.
Representative Krieger.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Vice Chair Barker.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnett.
Aye.
Chair McPherson.
Aye. Senate Bill 310 moves to the floor of the due pass recommendation, and I would recommend the consent calendar for this. If there's any objection, I move and I by unanimous consent that we put on the consent calendar. Close the work session. Senate Bill 310. We're in work session now on Senate Bill 311.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 311 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Comp moves Senate Bill 311 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? If not, the clerk call the roll.
Representative Bonamici.
Aye.
Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Representative Flores.
Excused.
Representative Comp.
Aye.
Representative Krieger.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Vice Chair Barker.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnett.
Aye.
Chair McPherson.
Aye.
Senate Bill 311 moves to the floor to do pass recommendation, and while this has a little bit more to it, representatives, I think it probably could be on the consent calendar as well, unless somebody thinks that that ought to be carried. Okay, if there's, I move that it to be placed on the consent calendar. If there's no objection, then so ordered. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 311. We have just a few minutes here before I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 190.
Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 190 comes from the Department of Corrections and extends to all employees of the Department of Corrections the right to seek testing of body fluids when an employee comes in contact with body fluids of another person while in the performance of his or her official duties. Chair, members of the committee, and the other side of the chamber, there was discussions about extending this to all parties, all people that may come in contact, and the problem was the relating clause is just too narrow for doing that, and that's why it's just to employees.
Very good. We have Michael Gower from the Department of Corrections, and I see Mr. DeLeishman signed up as well as Ms. Botkin. Do you all want to make it a joint presentation here? Because I see you're all signed up in favor. Mr. Gower.
Good morning, Chair McPherson and members of the committee. My name is Michael Gower. I'm the Institutions Administrator for the Department of Corrections, and I'm here today to provide you information on Senate Bill 190, which was pre-session filed by Governor Kulongowski at the request of the department. By the very nature of our work, corrections employees sometimes risk their lives in the performance of their duties. One of these risks is exposure to bodily fluids from our inmates. When this occurs, the inmates may deny consent for being tested for bloodborne pathogens to include HIV, hepatitis B, and C. Preventing our employees from knowing whether or not he or she should seek prophylactic treatment for exposure to life-threatening diseases. The current statute permits the corrections officers to petition the court to compel the inmates to be tested in such a situation. However, our DOC employees not specifically named in the current statute to include, but not limited to, our correctional counselors, physical plant, hearings officers, just to name a few, have no such right and creates an unfair disparity to our staff. Despite our training and our precautions in the 0305 biennium, we had 42 incidents of exposure. 27 of those were to our corrections officers, and 15 were to our medical staff. Since July 1st of 05, we have had 56 incidents of exposures, 44 to our corrections officers, 10 to our medical staff, 1 to a physical plant worker, and 1 to a hearings officer. I'm here to tell you today, fortunately, when requested, these inmates in these cases have consented to testing and disclosure. However, voluntary compliance is not sufficient protection for our staff. Senate Bill 190 would expand the right for testing and disclosure for every employee who is exposed to bodily fluids in the course of his or her official duties. We believe the expansion of this coverage is necessary to protect the health and safety of our entire workforce, ensuring that each employee exposed to bodily fluids from our inmates have the right to learn the information necessary to determine the need for further medical testing or treatment. The Department of Corrections respectfully requests that you send Senate Bill 190 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gower.
Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brian DeLeishman, representing the Association of Oregon Corrections Employees and the Oregon Council of Police Associations. A little institutional memory here. I find I've been here 30 years, and I can give you just a snippet. About 5 or 6 sessions ago, this right was extended to police officers. What they were finding was that when they are exposed to bodily fluids, they, in fact, had to go through a very cumbersome process in order to compel somebody to be tested so that they know whether or not they've been exposed to something. And in that meantime, while they're going through that cumbersome process, sometimes taking 30 days or longer, they had to go on some medications, prophylactic medications, that have some very heavy side effects. So we, in fact, changed that process for police officers. We expanded it in the corrections side. All this is doing is asking for that same process to be extended to other corrections workers. Thank you.
Ms. Botkin.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Mary Botkin with the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees. We don't have a lot to add. This has been our bill in the past. We have been active supporters of legislation like this for all of our members, including non-security staff. We just think this is a great idea. Earlier this year, we ended up actually having to file a court order to test an inmate who refused to be tested over in Eastern Oregon. You know, it's not difficult to get the courts to give you testing rights. It's just cumbersome. And it delays active treatment for the officer or the staff person who's been exposed. So we think this makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
Representative Kahn.
Thank you, Chair McPherson. I just have a question about prevention. And as a school administrator, all school administrators and special ed teachers have to go through our series of preventive immunizations for hepatitis B and C. Do your employees have those
yes.
types of...
Representative McPherson, Representative Comp, in most cases, we're not talking about a needle stick here or using gloves when you're dealing with these inmates. We're talking about sliming. We're talking about intentional exposure by bodily fluids by an inmate to someone. So you may have a shield, you may have shields, you may have been suited up, but the exposures here are not the accidental needle stick types that we're talking about in that kind of a setting.
Follow-up, Chair.
Go ahead.
I assure you, if you have not been dealing with a student or an individual that is convulsing or special ed kids that love to slime you, I'm not talking about a needle stick either.
We would, of course, support protection for all workers who are exposed to any kind of communicable diseases, whether it's on purpose or by accident.
Well, I do support the bill. It's just prevention is always a good measure.
And our folks do practice prevention. They also are trained to treat every inmate as a potential threat. You know, a disease.
High risk.
High risk. Thank you. So they do what they can.
I think we've got all the input we need, so I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 190 and open a work session on Senate Bill 190.
Mr. Chair, move Senate Bill 190 to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Barker moves Senate Bill 190 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? If not, the clerk call the roll.
Representative Bonamici.
Aye.
Representative
Forrest.
Excuse me.
Representative
Shaw. Aye. Representative
Krieger.
Aye.
Representative Lee. Aye.
Vice Chair
Barker? Aye.
Vice Chair
Whitman?
Aye.
Chair McPherson?
Aye. Senate Bill 190 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And somebody would like to carry this bill? Or
I'd be glad to.
Okay. Representative Barker, thank you very much. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 190. Unfortunately, because of the early floor session, that's as much of our agenda as we can get to. We're going to roll over the remaining bills from today to tomorrow's calendar. So we will get to them tomorrow because we're on the floor much later in the morning tomorrow. So I would urge those who have come to present, particularly on Senate Bill 260, to have make sure that all the committee members are comfortable with that bill so that it can move promptly when this action is taken. That concludes as much of our agenda as we can finish today. Committee, we are adjourned.